We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
In the NCAA tournament, small sample sizes, one-off challenges, and unexpected twists can turn a game upside down. In the early going on Sunday afternoon, Michigan women's basketball faced some things that could have took them down that path of falling to a highly talented, lower-seeded, mid-major team hungry to prove that they belonged on this stage. Florida Gulf Coast had won a nation-leading 25 in a row, and both Naz Hillman and Leah Brown dealt with foul trouble in the first half. Then in a close game, during the opening moments of that third quarter, sure enough, Naz picked up foul number three. Things were getting treacherous, and that's until Leah Brown happened. She had one of the most impressive quarters of her or anyone's season, and it came in her NCAA tournament debut, a 19-point explosion in the third quarter where she seemed to score in almost every way possible as Michigan turned a nail-biter into a lopsided victory with Leah seemingly controlling the game by herself. Brown finished with 28 points on 12 of 16 shooting as Michigan beat a team that hadn't lost in months by 21. As we've all seen in this tournament, momentum is certainly not guaranteed game to game, but this was about as impressive of a round of 64 performance as you can have, and it came after some real life challenges for 20 plus minutes. We're going to break this one down with Leah, with Kim Barnes-Rico, also talk a little Michigan LSU on Monday right here on Defend the Block.
We're talking Michigan basketball. Welcome to Defend the Block, where we'll take you inside the basketball programs with interviews, analysis, and so much more. Now, here's your host, Brian Bush.
Both the women and the men on to the round of 32. One day after Michigan takes down Texas Southern in the men's dance, it is the women with an emphatic victory over Florida Gulf Coast on Sunday down in Texas. As we've been telling you, the Michigan basketball postseason journey is presented by Absolpure. Absolpure is a proud Michigan company since 1908 and the official bottled water of Michigan athletics. As Michigan basketball journeys through the postseason, hydrate like a Wolverine and enjoy a bottle of Absolpure natural spring water, available in Meijer and other grocery stores in the state of Michigan, or brought right to you with at-home delivery service. To learn more about Absolpure water, visit absolpure.com. Absolpure, the official bottled water of Michigan athletics. Well, we've got great guests for you. We start with the women's team's victory over Florida Gulf Coast. We've got Leah Brown, the leading scorer. She was brilliant. Then head coach Kim Barnes-Rico after that. Then we'll flip over to the men's side, catch up with Brandon Johns Jr. from the bubble in Indianapolis, and then get a preview of the matchup on Monday. The LSU play-by-play voice, Chris Blair, who does an outstanding job, he will be by to talk about the Tigers in advance of that 1-8 matchup. Without further ado, though, let's bring you Leah Brown. It is a pleasure to be joined by Leah Brown back in her hotel after just an incredible performance. I mean, if I'd have told you that that would be how your NCAA tournament debut would go, what would be going through your mind in that spot?
Honestly, I probably wouldn't have believed it, especially how that first half went for me. Like I said, a surreal experience, trying to soak it in, but also, you know, trying to get focused on Tennessee on Tuesday. So super excited.
Yeah, take me through that first half and the emotions, the frustrations, the foul issues. It was kind of a herky-jerky first half. I mean, this team was shooting the ball pretty well, but it felt like other forces were preventing you guys from really getting going. So what was that like, and what was the message at halftime?
Yeah, I mean, obviously with Nas and I both in foul trouble, that's going to kind of create some so-called issues, you know, but I think that, you know, the team did a great job of stepping up, especially when Nas got her second. They still were able to score. They still were able to sustain a lead. And so then at halftime, I think that just the message was just everyone needs to be aggressive. And obviously Nas and I needed to be smart out of the gate. She picked up that third foul, if you want to call it that, but I think my team did a great job of just kind of, you know, backing up Nas and I when we were on the bench. So super exciting to see.
So in that third quarter, you start to get humming along and things are dropping for you. I mean, we hear the phrase heat check. We know, you know, when somebody's really feeling it. Did you feel like the basket was an ocean in that third quarter?
After I saw the first couple go in, it was definitely a nice feeling, especially because it hasn't really happened in a pretty long time. I think my team does such a great job of instilling confidence in me. And I think that we try to do that for each other. We saw a lot more threes go in today than in past games, especially. Just continuing to instill confidence in each other. It definitely was a good feeling to see the ball go through the hoop for sure.
Now, of course, when you score 87 and you individually go off for 28, offense is going to be at the top of the articles and the top of the conversation, to be sure. But defensively, you limit a Florida Gulf Coast team that, I mean, they haven't lost in months, and you limit them to 42% shooting, just 10 points in that fourth quarter. What was critical on that end of the floor?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that I think of when you say defense is AK. I think that you can put her, arguably, she's one of the best defenders in the nation. You know, every assignment that she's had this season, she's shut them down, and she's really frustrated them. So I think that just starting at her, she creates a lot of defensive energy for us, and then that we just kind of feed off of that. So I think that, you know, coming in, we knew that they were going to be a huge three-point shooting team. They shot, I think, like close to 1,000 threes on the year. So that was our game plan, you know, was run them off the line, kind of make them finish twos. And I think that ended up working in the long run. So
now individually, you came up with your 1,000th career point. It's hard to have that be topped by the other context of the game. I mean, when you think back 10 years down the road about your 1,000th point, are you even going to remember it because you're going to be thinking about the fact that you won a tournament game?
No, honestly, like I didn't even realize that I got it. You know, my teammates were in the locker room with water. I thought we were going to throw it on coach. I was like, no, we probably shouldn't. Like, it's not our locker room. And then, you know, we kind of broke the huddle down and yeah, they just like drenched me. You can probably see my hair is still soaking wet, but yeah, so that's definitely a huge accomplishment. But like you said, that's not even going to be something that I think about even probably tomorrow, you know, it's just been a great experience getting this first win in my first NCAA appearance. So.
When you committed to Michigan, you were coming to a program you knew was ascending, you knew had done some great things, but still had more to get to. Was this type of moment, was this type of performance front and center in your mind when you made that decision to come to Michigan?
Yeah, and I think Coach says it a lot. You know, everyone that's on this team right now wanted to come here and create something great. You know, obviously, we've had a lot of firsts this season, you know, the 10-0 or whatever it was. I think that coming here, definitely, it's really exciting to see kind of the goals that we have set coming forward. But also, like, we're not satisfied, you know. You don't want to make Sweet 16, Elite 8. So we're not done. Yeah, that's the message, is that we're not done yet.
Yeah, you're going to be looking ahead to a Tennessee team that took care of the Conference USA champion Middle Tennessee in their game on Sunday. How long do you give yourself to enjoy this before you're locked in on the Volunteers?
Yeah, I mean, we got to be locked in tonight. I think obviously we're all really excited now, right after the game. But I think tonight, you know, getting in the film room, watching some film, learning from today's game, and then watching them from their game today, I think is going to be huge. So obviously enjoy the moment and let it soak in for a second. But we got to look on to Tuesday.
And with that being said, it's a quick turnaround. Don't know when the start time is going to be at the time of this recording. But in the short prep, something that this team has had to get used to this year because of some of the COVID-related scheduling tweaks, how important is time management? How valuable is every minute between now and tip-off?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge, especially, you know, people forget, like, we're still in classes, we still got homework. Obviously, recovery is huge. We've had a lot of people play a lot of minutes tonight and step up. So just using, like you said, every minute that we have, whether that's watching film, watching our game, watching Tennessee's game, doing recovery, homework, I think is huge.
Lastly, I just want to get your thoughts. There's been plenty of headlines about the discrepancy in what you and your teammates and the rest of the players down in Texas have gotten versus the men's side, which, I mean, it's just completely unacceptable. What has it been like to see the response to this from outside that? Forget what the NCAA is doing to scramble, but the fact that so many have come to the defense of you and your teammates and the rest of the competitors down there, I have to imagine that that has been pretty warming to see, even though, again, it shouldn't have happened in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like you said, I mean, it's disappointing to say the least, to kind of see how everything went about towards the beginning. But like you said, seeing, you know, there's so many people reaching out, so many men's, women's representatives, you know, Dick's donating all of the weight room equipment, a lot of other companies reaching out, I think is huge. And I think that just goes to show that there are people who care about women's sports. A lot of people say that, you know, we're not as exciting to watch or things like that. But I think it goes to show, like I said, that people do care. So that is really exciting to see.
I don't think there have been many 19-point stretches over 10 minutes in any sport here in recent memory. So that was pretty darn exciting to watch, I can tell you that. Leah, congratulations. Really cool. Here's hoping that you and your team continue it on Tuesday.
Yeah, thank you.
With the head coach of Michigan women's basketball, Kim Barnes-Rico, and well, we just caught up with Leah Brown. I'll get to her in a moment, but if you don't mind, I'd love to ask what's going through your mind after you talk about the foul issues at halftime. You map out everything with Nas being able to come back, and seemingly a snap of the finger later, she picks up her third foul. What's going through your mind in that moment?
Yeah, I didn't think they were allowing her to play. And I think when Nas, you know, in the Big Ten, you're facing, you know, physical, strong post players. And, you know, Florida Gulf Coast was a different style of play. And they were falling out almost every time Nas got the ball and kind of took us out of, you know, what we wanted to do and took Nas out of what she wanted to do. But at that moment, when she picked up her third, I was going to let her play just because of what she went through in the first half. And just let her be smart about that. But for our team to be able to do what they did with Nas in foul trouble the whole entire game was pretty incredible. And I'm just excited to see Nas back at it on Tuesday because I know she'll be ready to go for sure.
Yeah, and without her playing her best performance, and I don't think it was because of her necessarily, it was just the scenarios of a one-game situation. But what Leah Brown did was so special to watch, 19 points in the third quarter alone. What kind of a boost did that give that entire team when there were some moments there where it felt like in the NCAA tournament, those are the types of ingredients you need for an upset. And they were starting to brew, and she shooed them all away.
Yeah, those are the performances you need in the NCAA tournament to advance, regardless of what your seed is. You know, even going into today, most people picked Florida Gulf Coast to beat us, and they picked them as the upset. So we didn't look past them at all. And you need people to step up and people to have those types of performances in the biggest stage, on the biggest stage. And Leah certainly did that for us tonight.
Leah had missed some time, pretty significant time, because of some COVID issues, and then, of course, the department-wide pause. She was not as efficient as she was in the early stages down the stretch in the regular season. It felt like she had brought it all together. What have these last 6-8 weeks been like for her to get back to a form that she could pull off the performance that she did here on Sunday?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And that's what a lot of people don't really understand is kind of what our team has been through. And specifically to Leah, I mean, she was playing at such a high level. And then before Christmas and like December 16th, our team went down with a pause. So we were out, even not practicing. Then she came back for five practices. Then she went out with a pause. And then our university went on pause, where she was out for 35 additional days. So probably in the span of most of our season, she had 5 practices, and it was 35 days before she practiced again. So trying to get back to where she was before took a little bit of time. And I think this last week, you could see her starting to get back to where she was and starting to get stronger, a little bit stronger. She lost weight. I remember her coming back after the pause and she looked so thin. And I said, golly, I actually, you know, was going to bring her some food from home because I wasn't sure she was eating enough. But I think, you know, it took its toll for sure, but it was nice to have her being in her in pre-pause form today for sure.
In a game where your team shoots almost 55% and scores 87 points, offense will inevitably grab a lot of the headlines, but your defense limited Florida Gulf Coast, a top 5 team nationally in scoring, to 43%. What was critical on that end to allow your team to do that?
Yeah, I thought our defense was really the difference maker in the game. And that was something that we kept emphasizing at every timeout and on every dead ball because, you know, they are such a potent offensive team and they run that system that is so difficult to defend that we knew defense was going to be critical for us and that field goal percentage was going to be really important. And also limiting them to one shot, which I thought we did a tremendous job on the glass, which is really another point of emphasis. But the defense was key, and us having the ability to prepare a few extra days for kind of their system really made a difference because our kids understood what they were going up against and our kids were prepared for what they were going up against. And anytime you face a matchup like that, I think it's extremely, extremely difficult. And that's probably why most people didn't think we were going to be successful, because they do play a system and they shot, you know, 1,000 threes compared to the next Division I school that had 700 and something. So for us to come in and limit them to 9 threes today was really, really incredible. And our defensive effort was special.
You know all too well how ruthless this tournament can be. It's a quick turnaround getting set for Tuesday in the 3-seed Tennessee. Before I get your early thoughts on the Vols, just what are the next 36 hours or so like? What are you focusing on? And how does the fact that you won't get a tip-off time for probably another few hours, how does that factor in?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy, huh? That's the first thing I said. Okay, how much time do you have? When are we playing and where are we playing? And everyone looked at me like this. I said, oh, wait, we don't know
Tuesday.
Where we're playing or when we're playing.
Yeah.
So, but nor does our opponent, I suppose. But yeah, I think right now a lot is recovery. And we just got to make sure that, you know, we're going to be ready to go for our next game. So making sure that you know, our trainer is outstanding and she's going to be working with our players that played a significant amount of minutes. Our other kids are using the weight room and they're going to be working with our strength coach and making sure they're getting an extra workout in. So all about getting recovered and ready to have our tank full, so to speak, on Tuesday, and then preparing for Tennessee, because obviously, you know, we didn't look at any of that before today, we meaning our players. Our staff was obviously working diligently on that scout and, you know, getting ready to go for that preparation. So, you know, just getting ready to go tonight. We have to go test. So that's something that you have to put in your schedule every day. So we didn't test pregame. So the kids just got back. They'll shower and do all that stuff. And then we'll walk to testing tonight. And after testing, we will meet and start to get ready for Tennessee. And then get a good night's sleep and kind of back at it again tomorrow with some prep for sure.
Lastly, just what has the bubble been like so far? How has your team handled it? And I asked Leah this as well. Just the pictures that got out and how frustrating that has to be. I mean, it's unacceptable. It's wrong. How has your team dealt with that? I mean, that has to be a frustrating thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the number one thing about our team is their resiliency and how they've been able to respond to everything that's kind of been thrown their way this year. And we have great experience and great maturity, obviously led by Haley Brown and Kenray Johnson, but, you know, Nas Hillman as well, our junior class, you know, they're really they're professional. They handle things exceptionally well. They represent the Block M and their families exceptionally well. But they also are strong women that have a voice and have an opinion. And I believe, you know, since March, since COVID of last year, you know, in the George Floyd murder and killing, and, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about fighting for change and talking about using your voice and using your platform in a proper way. And whether that's a Kenray or whether that's Nas or whether that's Haley, you know, making sure that we use that platform in the right way. So I think they were disappointed. But no one's really surprised. I mean, we live in this type of environment every day. And, you know, we live in a world that is kind of, you know, you have these discrepancies, you know, on a regular basis. But I think the thing that is different with our student athletes today is that they're fighting for change. They're constantly fighting for change. They're constantly using their voices and they're constantly using their platform. And they're not gonna stop. And I think that's a great credit to them. And, you know, I really encourage them to do so with the social and racial injustices that have happened this past spring. And now with these, you know, gender biases or gender inequalities, you know, I'm kind of doing the same. And if we want things to change, you know, we have to keep pushing and we have to keep, you know, our foot on the gas. And I have some tremendous student athletes that want to do that for sure.
It's a sign of a great program when it's a pleasure to follow them on and off the floor, and that certainly is the case, especially after a win like that. Coach, I know it's busy, so I'm very thankful that you carved out some time for us. Continued success. Here's to another one on Tuesday.
Thank you so much. Thanks for making time for us as well, Brian. Thank you for spreading our message. Go Blue.
Great to be joined by Michigan junior Brandon Johns Jr. from the bubble in Indianapolis. Brandon, appreciate your time. Take us inside that Indianapolis hotel and the bubble overall. What's it been like? I'm sure it's a unique situation.
It's been kind of different, but we all are becoming more accustomed to it. We have a lot more stricter rules, so we can't like just travel the hotel like whenever we want to, like how we normally would be. We have to be accompanied by an ambassador, someone that will walk us down to the place that we need to be or the place that we need to go. And obviously there's no lingering really. Can't really be with other teams. I mean, obviously have to stick to elevators with four people in it and with just our team. We can't have any other team with us in the elevator. So it's basically just all isolation. We're allowed to roam around on our floors and stuff, but that's really about it.
This team has taken this so seriously throughout the season. Case in point, I mean, I haven't been able to see you or any of the guys in person all season long. How much stricter is this from what you guys did in Ann Arbor? Because I know it was a little bit of a softer bubble, but I don't feel like there's been a huge change in how you guys are handling interaction amongst each other. Is that fair?
Yeah, in Ann Arbor, it was a little bit more freedom, but we kind of held ourselves accountable just to be a little bit more safer about this. We wanted the season to go as far as we could, and like we don't want to have like the 2-week break at all. So unfortunately, that did happen for us, but our guys stayed respectable to the rules, and we all stayed with it. But here, it's a little bit more stricter. They got a lot more rules in place and they're not really joking about it either. Cause if you slip up and you're going to be out of the bubble. So we don't want that at all.
I don't know how much you've paid attention to other games or other storylines, but of course the news that came out about VCU, a team that Coach Martelli has a personal connection to, them being a no contest. They're done because of COVID. I mean, is that a conversation point as you guys were finishing the regular season down to the postseason, now in the tournament? Hey, we just got to hold on a little bit longer. We can't mess this up now.
Yeah, that was a strict emphasis on it. We all are looking for one goal, and one little thing can mess it up for us. So we've all, like I said, we've just been holding each other accountable, trying to keep us on the right track, and just staying in it. We all believe in ourselves, and we all have the same common goal that we want to achieve. So we don't have any slip-ups, don't want any slip-ups.
Speaking of a common goal and something that Coach Howard talked about in the Isaiah Livers injury aftermath was that it was going to be collective. And you were the person to step in the starting lineup. When did you find out about that on Saturday against Ohio State? And what was going through your mind? I mean, I hear a lot from you and others, stay ready so you don't have to get ready. What was going through your mind when you found out you got that starting call?
Honestly, I felt a different type of confidence in myself because I had been in this position before, and it's something that I worked for the whole time I've been here. So I just want to embrace the opportunity and never be scared of it. So I just was more confident in myself than I think I've ever been. And I just wanted to take on that role and at least try to bring my teammates up with me.
You mentioned confidence. It's something you've talked about a great deal. When you are more confident, do you feel like you're more assertive and more aggressive? Because in these two games, since you've taken over that starting spot, it feels on the outside like you are more aggressive. Do you feel that internally?
Yes. I've been working on it a ton. I think I say this every time somebody asks me about it, but I've been working on it a ton. And it's the only thing that's going to take me far in life is confidence. And I need to bring that with me every single day. The more confident I am, the better I feel I'm going to play, the better, more aggressive I'm going to be on the court, and the more I'm going to be able to trust in myself.
I don't want any secrets on the scouting report. I'm wearing that Block M just like you are, but I'm curious, you had one day, really less than one day, to prepare for Isaiah Livers being out in the Big Ten tournament. You had a week in advance of the game against Texas Southern. Did you and this team feel more prepared in a post-Isaiah Livers setup against Texas Southern as you did against Ohio State?
I think in all situations, we try to come prepared at all times. We only might have a day, but some we might have like a whole week. So we try to keep it pretty consistent with how well we prepare for things. Obviously some things might be a little bit more quicker, but we all stay on task with it. And we all try to prepare mentally and physically and for any play sets that might be coming our way. So I think we do a really consistent job of just preparing at all times. So I think we both were prepared for both games, but one just didn't turn out how we wanted it to.
These two-day, really one full-day turnarounds are challenging come NCAA tournament time. How long do you give yourself to soak up and enjoy a win like you had against TSU on Saturday before you start to lock in on a really good LSU team? What's that process like? And you just have a moment where you say, all right, that's done. We're moving forward.
honestly, it's about 30 minutes to an hour. You enjoy it while you can, while you're there after the win. But then it's just on to the next one. We got to start prepping, got to start locking into our opponents and just really locking down on them and analyzing their, like how they play, the way we play, what can work for us, what might not work for us, because we got to use all the time that we possibly can. So every time is key.
What do you think is so important during these short turnarounds? Because in the early years of the Juwan Howard era, just like in the John Beilein era, this team's been really good on these short turnarounds. What's so important and what are the keys for this program that you guys really lock in? And it seems like you guys maximize that time as well as anybody in college basketball.
We just strictly try to focus on every little detail that we possibly can. Coach emphasizes details a lot. I don't know if anybody else has heard him, but I know our team, he really, really emphasized details. So the more we stick to the details, the basics, the more successful we are. And just never get bored with the basics. It's something that we always talk about in practice. And it's always worked for us. So we just got to stay the course.
To the assignment on Monday night, LSU, their offense is impressive, one of the best in the nation. What stands out as you dig into some of their film and learn about some of their personnel?
One thing that really stands out to us is just how efficient they can be on the offensive end. So we have to figure out a way just to shut that water off. We need to be solid on defense at all times. And they're a big rebounding team too as well, offensive rebounding team. So we try to keep them off the boards and just do our best on the defensive end to keep them out and from scoring.
Defensively, that was something that you look at the metrics and they aren't great compared to other NCAA tournament teams, but then you see what they did to St. Bonaventure the other day. They held them to 33%. They've got athletes on that side. What's going to be key on that end of the floor?
Just staying solid and going up strong. We have to be the most physical team out there. and the most connected team as well. So I think the more physical we are, the more aggressive we are, the more successful we are on the court. I don't think a lot of teams can handle when we're more aggressive than them. So we just need to come out and make the first punch.
And, you know, that second half against Texas Southern, you guys jumped on them. It was a 24-point game. They kind of got back into it. There were some self-inflicted wounds by Michigan in that one. What can you learn from that? I heard Mike Smith say we played to the score a little bit too much. What did you guys really drill home in the film from that to try to get ready for LSU?
Just staying consistent. It can't be a second half thing or a first half thing. Like, it's got to be the full game. So we just got to stay consistent the whole game, be solid, focus on the details, and that's how we'll be successful. We can't let up at any point during the game because that gives teams to get like another route back in, so and a chance to beat us. So we just need to stay solid the whole game, stay consistent, don't play the score, just play to win.
All right, enough of these hard-hitting questions. What are you doing when you got downtime? What were you doing during the quarantine? Do you have a video game set up? I mean, are you just watching movies or TV or what? I mean, it's got to be a little different in there.
Yeah, it is a little different. I usually would just play on my PS5. I would play Call of Duty or like Rainbow Six Siege most of the time. Or if I got tired of that, I would just watch Netflix. There wasn't really a lot to do. But I made the most out of those two options for sure.
Once you guys get five more in there and you come home, hopefully for a national championship celebration, once this is all over and you can get out and do something normal, I mean, what's the first thing on Brandon's list of, I can't wait to do this again?
That's a great question because honestly, I haven't even thought about that yet.
You're staying focused. I like it.
Yeah, I haven't even gotten past the whole tournament yet.
I gotta send this to the coaches. You're staying buttoned up. I like it.
Yeah, I haven't thought about anything past this month, honestly. So I honestly couldn't even tell you right now.
No, man. Like I said, good on you for staying locked in. I know I've been looking ahead a little bit, but I'm not a basketball player, as you can probably tell by stature, skill, and ability. Brandon, I appreciate your time. Good luck on Monday, and here's hoping. We miss you guys in Ann Arbor, but we don't want to see you for another few weeks. I hope you understand.
I totally agree. I totally agree. Thank you so much for having me, too.
We welcome in the play-by-play voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair. Chris, you're in Indianapolis. How are things, and how are you enjoying it so far?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, and looking forward to the game coming up, against the Wolverines. But, you know, just happy to be back, you know, watching March Madness. You know, not quite like the student athletes and the coaches, but I think all of us that are associated with it, you know, certainly really missed having it last year when it's something that you're just used to having. Sometimes maybe you take it for granted, and to not have it, and then, you know, the NCAA and all the conferences and coaches, administrators, and certainly student athletes finding a way to get the majority of the season done and get to a postseason and have some of that excitement. You know, the first day of action, the first four end games, you know, just having that feeling was great to have it. And now to be right here in the center of it. Indianapolis is a great town, and they certainly, even in a pandemic year, have rolled out the carpet. So it does have that feeling, and it's a good feeling to have.
Yeah, no doubt. We've all been spoiled over the last 48 to 72 hours with basketball. And LSU put up one of the more impressive performances. What stood out about what you saw from the Tigers against St. Bonaventure?
I think because they checked all their boxes. This is a team this year that I think if there's one – slight that the coach Will Wade would also agree with is inconsistency. There's been games this season against really good teams where they played really well and they've gotten their big four in double figures. They played good enough defense in spurts to be able to use their offense to build runs and kind of get separation. And then they were able to rebound, especially on the defensive glass. In the championship game of the SEC tournament, you know, they played pretty good defense against a very highly potent offense in Alabama. Problem was they gave up 18 offensive rebounds. So while they held Alabama to 42% from the field, it was more like 52% considering they had all those second chance opportunities. So against St. Bonaventure in the first game, they dominated on the glass, out-rebounded them by 18 or 19 total. Again, shot the ball extremely well. And you had four guys in double figures. The difference this time was Javonte Smart, the star guard, only had 5 points, but Andre Hyatt, who typically averages 4 to 5 points a game, had his first career double-double. So he kind of balanced that off. And then Trendon Watford, Cam Thomas, and Darius Days all finished in double figures, with Hyatt, Watford, and Darius Days all having double-doubles. So everything that LSU needs to do to be successful, they were able to do in game one. Hopefully they can carry some of that over into game two.
Yeah, Hyatt was a beast. He had 7 of those offensive rebounds that you were talking about. And I think when people saw the draw, it's natural. Michigan fans, like anybody, you look ahead, you see, oh, well, what could you encounter? And because of what LSU did in that SEC tournament, they were viewed as very dangerous, but people thought that because of the offense. Yet you look at the box score against the Bonnies, and they hold them to 33%. Where does that game rank in terms of their defensive performances, and what does sometimes hold them back defensively that they've been able to channel at times to have success on that end?
I think it's certainly one of their best defensive efforts. And to be honest with you, the last truly, I would say, 5 games they played, including the final game in the regular season, all 3 games in Nashville in the SEC tournament, and certainly in the first round of the NCAA, I think has been their best 5 back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back performances defensively. So hopefully that trend continues. I think LSU, you can tell very early, and here's what stood out to me yesterday, is this team is offensive-minded. They come out of the tunnel and they're probably going to put 80 points up on the board. Problem is, can they hold a team in the 60s? Can they hold a team maybe into the low 70s? Otherwise, it becomes a shootout. And they've gotten themselves in that sort of situation too many times this year. And if the shots don't go down early, you see frustration from Smart. Watford gets frustrated. They start to press a little bit on the offensive end, and then they just completely lose focus on the defensive end. And yesterday, one of the slower starts I've been a part of with LSU in a long time, you know, it was 6-4 with 11 and a half to go in the first half. So neither team really was lighting it up, but LSU still stayed locked in defensively. And Coach John Brady, who led the Tigers to a Final Four in 2006, I have the privilege to work the games. He's my color analyst. And, you know, he said he wasn't worried at all. He said he liked the way the Tigers were playing defense and he thought the offense would come around. And certainly the run they made in the final moments of the first half to have a 9-point lead, then had a 9-0 run to start the second half, they built that separation, and it was too big a hole for the Bonnies to climb out of.
We're with Chris Blair here, LSU play-by-play broadcaster, previewing the matchup with the Tigers coming up on Monday in downtown Indianapolis. And, I mean, LSU offensively, of course, several weapons, but the star of the show is Cameron Thomas, the freshman. He's on a lot of mock drafts coming up. I mean, he's the real deal. What impresses you most about watching this young man play?
First, he is a natural born scorer. You know, he was joking earlier in the year after a 32-point performance against Texas A&M. He told the television broadcasters after the game, they asked him where his favorite place on the floor to shoot is. He said everywhere. and he's backed that up, to be honest with you. You know, are there shots at times that maybe you question? Possibly. But the fact that he's hit so many of those at this point of the year, he has a complete green light. But what I've liked about his maturity from the first part of the year, first part of conference play to where he is today, is that certainly he's a focus. Coach Howard is going to be working and has been working on trying to probably deny the ball, be there on the catch defensively, try to frustrate Cam Thomas. And some teams have had success keeping him off the three-point line. Some teams have had success keeping him from driving. But he seems to find 20-plus points every night. And his maturity, I think, is that if the outside or mid-range jumper is not working, he's got such good ball skills that he will drive to the basket looking for something at the rim and will get to the foul line. So yesterday he had 27 points, which is his 15th game of the season with 25-plus. It's his 20th game of the season with 20-plus. And he had 11 of those 27 from the line. So he's an 88-89% free throw shooter. So he will create the offense depending on what the defense gives him. You hear that a lot in football. That's exactly what I think Cam Thomas does. Whatever the defense tries to take away, he'll go another avenue. And so far, so good. He's been able to put points up on the board.
And the other guy I want to ask you about is Trendon Watford. You alluded to him earlier. I mean, he was the best player on the floor in that SEC championship game against Alabama. He's a big who can do some distributing. He's not a ball vacuum in the paint. How do those two kind of play off one another, and how does Watford set up the rest of those offensive opportunities when he's the one posting up inside?
Well, it was interesting yesterday against St. Bonaventure. There were times where you could tell, even from our vantage point, which was well above the floor, that Cam Thomas and Watford were kind of working together. And one of them was going to eventually find the other one open. And, you know, that, I think, shows the unselfish play and the team mentality that both Cam and Trendon have. When you consider that, you know, they've been – the superstars on every team they've ever played on, probably from youth league through high school and even now at Power 5 Division 1 basketball. And Watford, I think, is a good facilitator. He knows he's going to draw a crowd in the same way that, you know, the game plan for Cam Thomas, they're going to game plan for Trendon Watford because he's got, again, good ball skills for a big guy. I mean, you'll see him bring the ball up, you know, and start the offensive set after made baskets by the opponent, after defensive rebounds or even turnovers. He has the ability to put his head down, drive in, draw a double team, sometimes a triple team, and he's just got a great knack for finding the open man. And if you're going to go one-on-one, he's done a much better job here again over the last six games of getting balance, going up off 2 feet, as opposed to maybe earlier in the year and early in his career, just going off on 1 foot and throwing it up and hoping he can hit one of those incredible shots. His game certainly has improved in that matter. And he creates, you know, problems from a matchup standpoint because he's probably going to draw every team's big or at least one of their bigs, possibly the four, sometimes the five. And he's going to bring them out of the paint. He's going to work out on the wings. He can hit threes. He's done a better job of putting those away and driving. But he certainly can bring your rim protector out from under the basket. And again, using his passing skills, if he doesn't have the shot, he'll find somebody who does have an open look.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by the Watford-Dickinson matchup. Last one for you, Chris. You mentioned checking all the boxes against St. Bonaventure. Took a little bit of time with that slow first 8-9 minutes, but what are the cues that you and Tigers fans are looking for if you're sitting there midway through the first half and thinking, yeah, this is playing out the way that LSU wants? What has to happen early?
Darius Days has to score. The Tigers are 19-1 this year when he scores in double figures.
Wow.
The majority of those wins, if he hits a three-pointer early, you can just about put LSU in the win column. And as crazy as that sounds, both John Brady and I on the radio broadcast, we have to bite our tongue every time he hits a three in the first 5 minutes of the game. Because to us, history has proven LSU is going to have a great day. We're just trying not to jinx them. So Darius Days is number one. And then I think secondly, the Tigers' formula, as I mentioned in the outset, when Darius is in double figures and he gets you 6 to 8, maybe double-digit rebounds, and you get 6 to 8 points from the bench, that's when LSU is in a good way. If Darius gets double figures and has good rebounding and you don't get bench production, you still got a chance to win. If you get bench production like you did yesterday from some unsung guys, again, that can offset some of the stuff Darius doesn't have. But that, again, gets you a little nervous. I think that's really the key that we've watched. The numbers back it up all season long. And if those things happen, you know, LSU certainly got a chance to win. Doesn't mean they're going to win, you know, a la the title game in the SEC championship, simply because they really had no bad takeaways from that game. They just came up a point short. And all of those things, except Darius Days, did not score in double figures, and that's where we got to the 19-1 on the year.
It's a 1-8 matchup that feels more fitting for a Sweet 16 or an Elite 8 or even beyond. Chris, we appreciate the time. Thanks for the thoughts, and Michigan fans will be rooting for a triple team on Darius Days early, I guess.
That probably would work, but looking forward to it. It's going to be a great game, as you said, a considerably earlier matchup with, I think, two teams that are going to present some exciting basketball and have a great game. So thanks for having me on, and have a great call of the game.
One down, five to go for both programs. The men will take on LSU. It's a 7:10 tip-off on Monday night, which means that our pregame coverage along the Michigan Sports Network from Learfield IMG College kicks off at 6:30. And the women, we don't know as of this recording when they will play Tennessee in terms of a tip-off time. That game will take place on Tuesday. It's a 3-6 matchup, winner to the Sweet 16. Thanks to Leah Brown, Kim Barnes-Arico, Brandon Johns Jr., and Chris Blair for their insight, for their time, and thanks to all of you. As always, we encourage you to subscribe, rate, and review Defend the Block and MGO Blue podcasts with John Jansen as a whole. You can also send us an email, MichiganWolverinesRadio@gmail.com. All of that helps a great deal in spreading the word, especially during such an exciting time for both of these basketball programs. I'm Brian Bush. Thank you so much for listening, and go Blue.
Thanks for listening to today's edition of Defend the Block, part of our Michigan Athletics Podcast Network, MGO Blue Podcasts. The preceding is a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.